Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Nerds Be Heard. I'm here with my co-host, Matt, as usual. You know, a lot of stuff has been going on in the Nerdverse. So we're going to talk about a lot of things since we last, you know, had everyone up on this podcast, and as well as talking about the last two episodes of Loki. So I'll start off with Matt. What has been going on? Have anything sparked your interest in the news recently?
Everything is going on. There's just lots of anniversaries, lots of movie news, lots of Nerdverse action. We did that episode on the 20th anniversary of the Fast and the Furious, and that was last week. F9 came out in the same week. I thought that was worth noting, and I also thought it was worth noting that the franchise is officially dead. It has been buried. There is a tombstone on it, and I don't ever want to see, hear, or know about anything related to the Fast and the Furious franchise ever again. It's dead.
While you're talking about that, so everyone knows, Matt has seen F9. I have not. Why don't you give everyone a little bit, you know, non-spoiler type review / thoughts about that movie, since I know you're very passionate about it.
Yeah, extremely passionate about it. I will give a spoiler-free preview of the movie. I strongly believe, as a franchise fan, that the reason people go and see these movies and have a passion for it stems from their love and their nostalgia for the original three. Car culture, really great flicks with decent storylines, but just an emphasis on cars. And I think that people are desperate for the franchise to get back there and are so invested at this point that we're just going back to the theater, like me, opening night, praying that somehow they realized and woke up to they need to go back to the original formula. The problem is that none of us are taking a stand. Instead, we're just kind of showing up every time, filling the pockets of Universal Studios. And Universal Studios is obviously not reading the comments of the long-term franchise fans. Now, mind you, there are a bunch of popcorn movie, you know, dumb green screen, you know, people that want to go watch movies that make no sense and defy logic of all sorts, like Dominic Toretto and Furious 7 stomping a building to the ground as if that wasn't a spit in the face to every fan of the franchise. So I get it. There are a group of people like that, especially internationally, that go to the movies for those kind of epic moments. And those people thoroughly enjoyed F9. My issue is that it is not even remotely even a nod to car culture anymore. What F9 did is it expanded on what Fate of the Furious did, which was just completely throw logic out the window. Now, we all can agree, Fast and Furious 5, Fast 5, Furious 6, Furious 7 started to really push the boundaries of, okay, this is just ridiculous.
Yes.
Fate took it to, okay, now we've just got this bald dude who punches through walls, can like throw a submarine, catch freaking cars, and everyone's just going to be fine with it. And that was the first nail in the coffin of the franchise. And then I got really excited. Justin Lin was coming back to the director's chair. He seems to have a knack for paying homage to the fans that love the car culture while also taking it to another level from an action perspective with amazing set pieces, amazing locations, and keeping it somewhat grounded in reality where it's like, okay, a human being might be able to survive that, maybe, right? And like a one in a million chance, but at least it's logical in some way, shape, or form. The problem is that he has obviously watched Fate of the Furious and decided, you know what? Let's take everything they did there and just do it times 10. I mean,
you think he was told he had to do that? Like, for someone who, you're such a big fan of his and you think some of his entries are some of the better ones.
Yeah.
You think that he had a lot of say, or it's kind of, they just brought him back and he directed the movie because it's a fun time for him.
I think there's one reason he came back. I think he came back to bring justice to Han. There was a huge move. I think it's the only thing where they actually listened to the fans. There was a huge movement online called hashtag justice for Han, where fans of the franchise were very frustrated that Jason Statham's character, Deckard Shaw, murdered Han in cold blood, and then in Fate of the Furious became kind of makeshift part of the crew, even so much so as showing up to the barbecue at the end and getting a handshake from Vin Diesel's Dominic Toretto. This was a huge slap in the face to fans of the franchise that recognized that the movie is built on this idea of loyalty, friendship, that it becomes family, the family that you choose. And it's like, how could you just like shake the hand of a guy that murdered your brother, right? So yep. There was a huge movement that like, you can't do Han that way. This is extremely frustrating. And I don't think the fans meant bring Han back to life, although I'm super happy that they found a way to do that, however illogical and stupid it was. But it was really just a cry to, hey, if you're gonna make Deckard Shaw part of the crew, he's got to redeem himself first. And saving Dom's kid in Fate of the Furious is not redeeming himself. He has a long road ahead, or had a long road ahead. And, you know, they go into that a little bit in F9. I'm just going to avoid spoilers at all costs. But essentially, Justin Lin is a huge supporter of the character of Han. That character of Han is one that he created before the Fast and the Furious. He had his own movie prior to Tokyo Drift called Better Luck Tomorrow, which is a great coming of age story with a bunch of adolescent, badass Asian American characters that kind of had these, like, they were like thieves and they did all this kind of crazy stuff. And it was the beginning of Han, who then also was a main character in Tokyo Drift. A lot of people don't know about that. A lot of people have never seen Better Luck Tomorrow. I think that's the name of the movie. But anyway, so I think for him, he took it to heart. You know, he had no say in Fate of the Furious. And I think he agreed. They kind of did a disservice to this character that to most Asian Americans is a huge hero for them. It's a representation of them on screen that, you know, it's like, okay, finally there's an adequate representation in mainstream media for Asian Americans to look up to. And then they just do them like that. It was like, so to him, it was really important to respect that and to bring it back in a way that would allow justice for Han. So I think that's why he came back. And I think that, yeah, the studio has just demanded, it's like, look, our most successful installments are the latest ones, but they don't take into consideration that they've also opened up in like the China market is just massive. And I don't think it's the fact that the movies are better. I think it's just that it's reaching wider audiences just in the matter of how commerce works and what's available, right? So yep. I just think Disney does a much better job at really reading the pulse of their audience, whereas Universal is just kind of like, they sit in a boardroom and they're like, well, look, this one did $1.2 billion and we don't care what the people said. They came and showed up and they're doing it again and again and again. And then day one fans like me, I said it after Fate of the Furious and I reneged on my word where I still showed up to F9 opening night. Unless something blows me out of the water with a trailer for Fast 10, I might wait for DVD. I'll still see it to give it a chance, but I'm not going to be the guy showing up on day one because they absolutely spit in the face of day one fans. They made fun of the fans. They are basically insulting you for being a fan of the franchise by just making a complete joke of the whole thing, completely throwing any logic out the window and really making fun of themselves in a way that's not funny. It's just plain rude and insulting. So I give it a 0 out of 10. And May God have mercy on the soul of everyone involved, and rest in peace, Paul Walker. Because I tell you, if he was still alive, I think he would have walked off set and said, I'm not doing this.
Well, that alone just makes me feel I'm definitely not watching that till it's available on streaming or comes out on like Blu-ray or something. Because it's funny, I would say the last one, Fate of the Furious, is the only one I've never watched more than once. Like, I watched in the movie theater and I've never seen it again. And it left not as bad of a taste in my mouth as I know it did for you, but it was just kind of like, okay, I don't really need to see these movies anymore, like immediately, the way I felt before.
Yeah, it's exactly. And F9's just going to do more of that for you. Now, I got in a heated argument with an individual I didn't even know, who is friends with a friend of mine, and was telling me F9 is the greatest movie he's ever seen.
So,
take what I say with a grain of salt, right? I hate Thor Ragnarok. A lot of people love Thor Ragnarok. It's just for me when, you know, I'm not going to give a spoiler out, but like, let's just say Vin Diesel's in a helicopter that blows up, and then he can jump off said helicopter, roll, and then land, and then he's still got a clean white t-shirt. There's a problem there, right?
Yeah, that bothers me too, just because like, it's one thing in a superhero movie because you're setting it up that like they are superhumans. Mm-hmm. They are not normal people. So when a guy like Vin Diesel's character, Dom Toretto, he's just a normal guy, he should not be able to do that stuff.
Well, let's put it this way. Let's just put it out there in the universe. Avengers Infinity War is a more believable storyline than F9. At this point, Dominic Toretto, in the logic of this universal cinematic universe they've created for the Fast franchise, Dominic Toretto could take on the entire Avengers and not so much as get a cut or a bruise. Roman Pierce could take on the entire Avengers, every single one of them, and not get a cut. And that's actually a very specific and real storyline in the movie, where they actually somewhat acknowledge we're invincible.
Okay.
So really brutal. The one thing you'll like is there's like a full 5-minute scene of them referencing Star Wars characters and who's what Star Wars character.
Oh, interesting. That's an interesting thing to have thrown in that movie. I wonder if Justin Lin is being like, hey, I want to direct a Star Wars movie.
It could be. And it was a very long scene and it was goofy as hell. But as a nerd, I kind of was like, okay, you know, this is fun to watch. But that was
speaking of Star Wars, because we'll roll. You gave a pretty good.
Yeah, we're moving on. Fast Nine. I don't want everyone to talk about it again. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but your boy Han is going to be in Kenobi, which we've all talked about.
Yep.
And there's been rumors that have been coming out that Inquisitors are going to play a big part of this series. And are you familiar with what the Inquisitors are, Matt? Because they were first really introduced in Star Wars Rebels.
I'm not. Educate me and the fans that are casuals.
So Inquisitors, weirdly enough, two things have come out since we've last all spoke with each other. Is there's rumored that not only are Inquisitors going to play a big part in Kenobi, they're also going to get their own Disney Plus show. So what Inquisitors are, they essentially are Sith lightsaber wielding people who are force sensitive, who work for Darth Vader, and they are hunting down the remaining Jedi that they believe are still in the galaxy after Order 66.
Hmm.
They're one of the best parts of Star Wars Rebels. It's something that Dave Filoni has created. There's been rumors that he's very big on continuing their storyline within the Star Wars universe on Disney Plus and in the movies. So I'm pretty excited for that. I think the reason I'm bringing this up is I believe that, well, I can't think of Han's real name off the top of my head.
Sun King.
I think he may play an Inquisitor in Kenobi.
Yeah.
And it's been rumored that there is going to be at least one episode where Obi-Wan Kenobi is full-fledged battling them, badass long lightsaber sequences, that Darth Vader obviously feels his presence and he is sending his top Inquisitors after him.
What do they look like?
So the ones that have been in Rebels, and they're also in Jedi Fallen Order, the video game, they all kind of wearing black armor. It's got the Empire logo on them, but you know, some are human, some aren't. It could be kind of just like any type of person, just like the Jedi were. Some of them are former Jedi, or a lot of them are former temple guards, which is also something that was introduced in Rebels. So it's a lot of mythology that was created for that show that they're now bringing over into live action.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering because Sun Kang has grown his hair out pretty dramatically, and I was wondering if that had something to do with the character, the way they kind of are portrayed.
Yeah, I mean, they've shown them both wearing helmets and not having like face covering, so it could be the look they're going for. For all we know, he could end up being someone that Obi-Wan Kenobi befriends on Tatooine, and there's now basically been confirmed rumors that he will leave Tatooine. For one reason or another.
Nice. I mean, yeah. Honestly, I think that's probably my highest anticipated show, movie, any type of media content in a long time, if not all time. I'm a huge Kenobi fan. And I think just that, even if they just stayed on Tatooine, I think it'll still be the most epic show ever.
I agree.
And yeah, they've got so much territory they can cover. And, you know, let's be honest, when they've gone down these kind of paths of kind of, hey, let's venture off the main timeline a bit and let's focus on kind of some of these, you know, side stories and kind of alternate timelines from what, you know, we've already kind of witnessed, it's been really good, right? Rogue One was one of the best installments of the Star Wars cinematic universe. I really enjoyed Solo. I was one of the, you know, original people to see it and praise it. And I went in as a hater. Like, so I mean, Kenobi, I have really high expectations, and I can't see them really screwing this one up. So, it's
funny. Speaking of Rogue One, I don't know if you've seen this rumor, but I've read a lot of sources that say it's true. They don't know to what extent, but for the Cassian Andor series, George Lucas is involved to a certain extent.
And they're bringing Emilia Clarke's character back. Did you hear about that?
I did hear about that. Or she's kind of said that she... I don't think it's been official, but she was in a comic book that they brought her character back, and she's basically saying, hey, I'd love to come back, but there are rumors that she's probably going to get a show, and I'm assuming with Darth Maul, kind of unofficially Solo 2, like, but going with that Underworld Crimson Dawn storyline. Darth Maul will definitely be back in live action. He's played a huge role in all the animated shows, which George Lucas brought him back to life. So
you can't tell me Darth Maul doesn't come to Kenobi. He's gotta.
It depends on the story and the time frame of it.
I feel like they have
to. Because, I mean, have you seen the episode? Have you seen any of the clips from Rebels with Obi-Wan Kenobi in it?
Yeah.
So you know what happens to Darth Maul, right?
Well, or, when he comes back with his metal legs and
no, so I mean, spoiler. Do you want me to tell you the spoiler on air?
Yeah.
So in Rebels, actually, it's pretty poetic. Darth Maul is hunting Obi-Wan Kenobi. They do meet. Well, he is, you know, on Tatooine looking over Luke, and they do battle, and he kills him once and for all, for real.
Yeah, and you think they're not going to, they're just going to keep that canon and not do it live action?
I don't think they'll redo that in live action. There may be flashbacks that get him in there. I just don't, Dave Filoni's created that. That is official canon, the animation. If it was just in a book, or if it was in a comic book, I totally think they would change it. But I don't think they'll redo that scene in live action. I personally don't, but there may be flashbacks.
I'm making a bet. We're going to come back to this.
It doesn't mean they won't interact based off the timeline they show it, but that is the last time he is seen.
Yeah, I think he'll be in it somehow. I don't know. I mean, I feel like, all right, maybe they'll find another place to put him, but after the Solo cameo and then with, you know, this prime opportunity for Kenobi in their history, I don't know. I feel like they might find a way to throw him in there. And if they don't, they don't, but it just seems like it could be really awesome.
I don't disagree with you. I do just think the big focus is going to be Darth Vader. And supposedly Hayden Christensen was so on board and just loved it that he is going to continue his run as Vader on Disney Plus, whether it is that Inquisitor show, whether he gets his own show. I'm betting it'll be an Inquisitor show, learning more about them. I'm assuming you're going to get a taste of them in Kenobi, and people have seen the animated shows, but they still have tons to learn about them. We don't necessarily know how many they are. They're named like the seventh sister, like the second brother, like that's their names. And we've only seen some of them. And I think it's been done that way on purpose. So I think that's something for people who haven't watched the animated shows are really going to love. It's going to be pretty badass and it's going to be really cool. And it's going to be the lightsaber dueling type stuff that the fans want to see. I think you're going to be a fan of it.
Oh, if it involves lightsabers and any form of force sensitive characters, I'm in. That's why I watch Star Wars. The other stuff, it takes me a little bit longer to come around on, which, again, I think we've talked about this on this podcast. Just even, you know, unless it's Han Solo, I it takes me a minute. But yeah, super excited about that. And then, yeah, other nerd news, there was the expanded Shang-Chi trailer. There was, you know, some more kind of releases out of the Black Widow movie. What did you think of that extended Shang-Chi view? Because there was a lot to digest.
I loved it. I'm so pumped for that movie. I think that is the movie I'm the most excited for that is of a new character. I think number one has to definitely be Doctor Strange and or Spider-Man. But for the new people, I'm so excited for that. I love martial arts, like that setting, and I really love Simu Liu, the actor who's playing Shang-Chi, and I thought the action looked really good. It seems pretty, like, for someone like you who's not the biggest fan of, like, CGI, I obviously there's some things in there that aren't realistic, but I think it's going to be pretty grounded. It looks like they do a lot of their own fight stunts. I'm pretty excited for that. And I know we had talked about off air, but the ending with what seemed to be Abomination in the that fight at the end, who we haven't seen since the Incredible Hulk movie.
Yeah.
And that was kind of cool.
Have you taken another look at that? Do you know, that doesn't look like anyone from like, that looks like a Doctor Strange character.
Yes. It's it looks like B.D. Wong.
Do you believe that? Or do you think it was just kind of a,
I do believe it actually. Do you?
I do. When I went back and screen grabbed it, 100%. So this is definitely setting up that's going to be a setup for sure.
Yeah. So what I've heard is the end of that is going to involve a tournament, and it's going to bring back a lot of people, other cameos. And I also want to correct myself. It's not B.D. Wong. It's Benedict Wong. B.D. Wong is from Jurassic Park. Just thinking that. And supposedly the shield is in a cage in a shot in that fight scene, Captain America's shield, which is interesting. I don't know if that's just an Easter egg. I saw the still, it's definitely there. I just thought that was interesting.
Very interesting
because I don't see a world where he's in that movie for a cameo.
Could it be I don't even want to speculate.
But what did you think of the trailer?
thought it was great. I think you're right. There's so what Marvel's done a really good job at, with the exception of Thor Ragnarok, is actually make CGI seem believable and watchable. And I actually love how they've made it less cartoonish and very real, right? Except for Thor Ragnarok. And so this reminds me of like the Doctor Strange-esque CGI. I love Doctor Strange. I think it's one of the best standalone movies there was. And it's just, yeah, there's magic, but it's just not over the top. It's just very kind of, it's not essential to the story. It just bolsters the story. And that's where I like CGI. It just, it helps it, but it's not the whole point of the movie, for example. I think this is gonna be a great installment. I think it's gonna be very surprising to people that aren't, you know, don't know much about Shang-Chi. I think it's gonna be another like worldwide phenomenon. I mean, we talked about it a little bit before and you mentioned this earlier this week, where you said, I think you said it's gonna be like the next Black Panther, where it's just this huge movement. I wholeheartedly agree, and I alluded to it earlier in this episode where I said F9 is trying to do justice for Asian Americans who, you know, felt that they were almost a slap in the face of a character that they really looked up to as a hero, that was a main character in an amazing franchise in Sung Kang. And I feel like this is going to be another great representation, you know, similar to what Falcon the Winter Soldier was able to do. Now we're going to have, you know, a strong Asian America cast, not a lot of kind of other characters to kind of, you know, steal any kind of spotlight. And it's going to be really kind of a huge cultural movement, I think. And I think it looks epic, looks grounded in reality. It looks like the story's got heart to it. I'm really excited for it.
I'm also really excited that they picked. So Simu, the guy who's playing Shang-Chi, I mean, I'm a huge fan of his, but I like this. I've talked about this before, but he's in this comedy called Kim's Convenience, which you can check out on Netflix, which is really great. That's like his biggest role, and it's not even mainstream. This guy is going to be a movie star. Kevin Feige and team, you know, they found him and saw potential in him to bring his, because he's really just been in like that big show. It's a comedy. It's nothing about his role in that says, oh, this guy's the next action star, but he's going to be like The Eternals. It has a lot of great people in it, but they're all famous already for the most part. I like that. Awkwafina, she's obviously really famous. I think she's the, you know, the draw for an already famous Asian American actress in the movie. But Simu, I can't talk enough how much I think he's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that, but I'm also looking forward to Black Widow, because I mean, you were sending me some excerpts, I guess, of some of the early reviews or early previews that people got to see. And like that, I was actually had low expectations for that. I'm like, all right, that story's been told already. Like, I believe that Black Widow should have had a standalone film 10 years ago. Like I think it was a sin that she didn't. But now I was going into this film thinking it's too little too late. It's kind of, you know, it's stuck in the past. We got to move on to the next phase. You know, we know what happens. But from what, you know, you're saying, and from what, you know, some of these early reviews are saying, it's going to be my kind of Marvel movie, you know,
exactly.
A little bit of John Wick.
Some people are saying it's got the best action that any Marvel movie has had, which to me is insane.
Yeah, that's a really high bar to set. But I mean, some of the best action sequences thus far in the MCU have been with Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow. And you know, actually she in Iron Man 2 really kind of raised the bar as to, you know, this hand-to-hand combat sequences that are just really, really badass. So but yeah, super, super excited for that. I think it's going to be epic beyond proportion. I can't wait to watch it on screen opening night. But yeah, then there's been we've been 2 weeks of just news. What else?
Which I know we talked about, Harrison Ford got injured on the set of Indiana Jones, which is seems like it's all going to be fine. They're found a way just shuffle production and shooting scenes without him. But it just that it gets me a little worried that we've talked about this before, as much as we love Harrison Ford. Maybe he is too old to be doing a movie like this. If he got hurt like that, I'm not gonna say easily, but I got the vibe if it was, you know, a spring chicken, they would have been fine. And is it gonna look weird? And then I know we've talked about before that there's been some, you know, leaked set images where they're clearly gonna de-age him. And I definitely believe that. I mean, Lucasfilm has done that in all of the new Star Wars movies. So why not for Indiana Jones? It's just, it's really upsetting he got hurt.
Yeah, it is. And it's like, I mean, it was, I'll never forget, like watching Force Awakens, right? Him in Force Awakens was great. He had some of the best scenes, like it's true, all of it, the Force, the Jedi, but like the action sequences were hilarious because he's like running in slow motion and he's an old dude. And it's like, so the monsters are in the, are slowing down so as they not catch up with the old guy. It's just like, doesn't make sense. It actually hurts the story a little bit versus like Blade Runner 2049 leveraged it and did a really good job at kind of hiding age a bit and kind of like not making like a huge like runaway sequences. They just, you know, he was tactical and kind of, you know, it just really, really worked. And I just hope that with Indiana Jones, they find a way to make it less like, you know, running in a field or running from the Nazis or like punching people in slow motion. Like, I just hope they leverage it. And this just makes me think they're not, and it scares me a little bit. So we'll see. Hopefully he heals up. I think he was injured in Blade Runner 2049 as well, and they worked around it. So it's a recurring theme, but I mean, who can blame him? The dude's almost 80 years old.
I know. And he lives the life of a much younger man. I mean, the guy still does plenty of things that an 80-year-old would never be caught dead doing. So more power to him.
Well, that's the thing. You know, if he was in his 60s, you couldn't expect him to do what Indiana Jones needs to be doing. So it's just, he is the, so yeah. it just cracks me up because in Last Crusade, him and Sean Connery were like the same age. He played his dad. Not really, but
yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah,
they were very close in age, and it was just funny because Sean Connery always looked older than he actually was. But yeah, so there was that, and then I guess, you know, Loki's the next big thing to talk about, and two episodes we have to cover this time around, and I can sum them up in 20 seconds.
Do it, since they're more fresh on your mind.
So. Episode 2 of Loki. Loki is now working for the TVA. He is looking for the alternate version of himself. A bunch of nothing happens. He runs into himself, who's another master of disguise, and it turns out it's a female version of Loki. We find out that there are alternate versions that can look different, that are somewhat different to than basic exact copies, which makes me really excited because then maybe Spider-Man, you can bring back Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield using the multiverse. But not much else happens in episode 2. So let's move on to episode 3.
But wait, real quick, before you move on to episode 3, you're 100% right. I know we've gone back and forth about the Spider-Man. It's definitely happening. That one scene at the end of episode 2 where they show the timeline and that it's going in all different directions, that's done 100% on purpose. Mm-hmm. Set up Spider-Man and Doctor Strange. That's, I'll let you go on episode 3, but that was like the one part about the episode that I really liked. But yes, that's 100% happening. There's no reason anyone can sit here and say that it's not. All the actors are lying.
Yeah. And the only other thing really to absorb from episode 2, as far as I'm concerned, is that You still don't really have a good read on what Loki's intentions are. You know, he's doing a really good job at, like, is he being deceitful? Is he on the side of the TVA? You know, is he telling you what his goals are, or is it going to be one big trick? I don't know. And that's really exciting. And that's where Tom Hiddleston shines. I do love Owen Wilson still. I think he's great. I think the way he admires Loki, there's something there. And there's a really good kind of buddy cop vibe between the two of them too. And I feel like there's going to be this loyalty between the two of them, even though, you know, Loki's, you know, ultimately somewhat deceptive and it, let's say, betrays him by ultimately following alternate Loki, basically they teleport out to another world, which is where episode 3 takes us. So episode 3 begins with female Loki. We'll call her Variant, because I don't know what else to call her at this point. And she seems like a normal woman out to dinner with a friend, and she's asking questions to this person who you'll recognize from episode 2 as one of the people that she kind of...
She's a TVA agent.
Yes, a TVA agent, but she's basically trying to get secrets from her, using her deception and tricks. And what we find out later in the episode is basically she uses old memories of people to kind of create these worlds where they start to earn their trust, and then she's able to kind of extract information from them. That's for people with strong minds versus people with weak minds. She can basically just kind of get information from them pretty easily and manipulate them. But this is a very kind of key ingredient that's going to set up a huge part of the rest of the show, which is she's drawing on memories from their past life. This changes everything we know about TVA agents, because we thought that TVA agents were created by the timekeepers, these big bad timekeepers, which I have theories about because nobody's really even met them at this point. So who are these? Exactly. So, but apparently they're created by the timekeepers, and we find out this episode that they're actually all variants. Every single one of them had a past life in some part of the timeline, future, past, present. They are variants that have deviated from this set timeline and are now working for the TVA, similar to how Loki was kind of working for the TVA. So there's probably kind of a common theme there. But anyway, throughout this episode, basically Loki 1 and Variant Loki are trapped on a world that's about to be destroyed. There's another moon about to kind of collide with this planet. And essentially, it's a journey towards figuring out how they're going to escape this planet. They basically uncover information that there's an arc, and that they have to take a train to this arc, and then basically only the wealthy of this planet or whatever the heck this is are allowed to take this arc and leave. So they got to figure out a way to manipulate their way onto this arc to get out of there before they meet their pending doom. Through that, we get a little bit of a nice dialogue between the two Lokis. You find out about how they were raised, what their similarities are, what their differences are. We find out they're both members of the LGBTQ community, which is a direct confirmation that Loki goes many ways, which is a big shout out for people looking for that representation on screen. We talked about that a little bit in our last podcast. And so they've just made a direct confirmation that both these Lokis are members of that community. We also kind of get some great little Easter eggs and throwbacks to other moments throughout the MCU, one of which is Loki basically raging on a train, drinking and singing Asgardian songs, and then he takes his glass and he goes another, and he throws it down just like in Thor, which is a great kind of brotherly bond kind of throwback, which I thought was really cool. And then ultimately they make it to a lot of different things happen, but let's not beat around the bush. They make it towards this arc, and ultimately it gets destroyed, and you're like, okay, what happens now? Credits end. What's going on? What's going to happen? And I have a theory But I'll let you kind of elaborate on anything you want to elaborate on with those two episodes before I give my theories.
Okay. So I'll tell you between episode two, I really liked episode two. I thought it was a good continuation from episode one. I was really into the show. I've told the listeners that after watching the first episode, I felt like Loki was going to be the best of the Disney Plus shows for Marvel. Episode three completely changed my mind. I will tell you it is now my least favorite based off that episode, which I know surprises Matt. I thought the third episode was extremely boring. I thought it was such a filler episode. And for anyone who watches or is a fan of Doctor Who, it was a poor man's Doctor Who episode. I was very disappointed in it. I hate to say it. I mean, I didn't hate the episode. It just didn't do anything for me. It did have some good moments. I did like the interactions between Loki and whatever they want to call it, Lady Loki. I personally actually don't even think that is a variant of Loki. I think she's playing him or some. I think there's more there. But regardless of that, episode three to me was kind of just a filler episode. I was really disappointed. I would say it's the worst episode out of any of the Marvel episodes for any of the series.
That's interesting. I thought episode two and three were both extremely boring, and I'm not invested at all, which is a big problem. And I agree, definitely the worst of the three shows. I liked episode one, but I give both episode two and episode three 5s out of 10.
I'd give episode two probably a 7 out of 10, and I'll go with the 5 out of 10 for episode three. It severely missed Owen Wilson, hardcore. Nothing against anyone else, but I was sold on the show being like a buddy type cop, whatever you want to say, show between him and Tom Hiddleston, and I don't think it's gonna be. Tom Hiddleston has said on social media that like the next episode is like the episode that changes everything. I'm really hoping for that. I'm hoping the back end of the show will, because it's crazy, it's half over because it's just a 6-episode series, which just blows my mind because I'm like, nothing's really happened for there to be just 3 episodes left. But I am more thinking now that this show was solely created just like Iron Man 2 was to set up the Avengers. This is to set up the multiverse, and that's why it was made, and it's showing. I do think the writing though, and like the cinematography, everything, it's creative and it's good. It just, yeah, it hasn't lived up to my hype that I wanted it to.
And I have I think my theory strongly corroborates what Tom Hiddleston's saying, and I think the big reveal happens in episode 4. And that is, I believe that Loki stole one of the Infinity Stones. I think we witnessed him having newer powers that he's never had before, such as Scarlet Witch style levitation and kind of throwing objects and using the force almost to grab objects. Yeah,
he was pretty badass, which
I think he took the Time Stone.
That's a good theory. I mean, it hasn't really crossed my mind, but I think that's a good theory.
I think he got heightened abilities because he took one or two of the stones. And somehow why I say the Time Stone is that the one that makes most sense to this whole idea of time, right? And just this alternate timelines and stuff like that. He can somehow screw everything up using one of these stones. On top of freeing whatever deviants, and I think them finding out that, hey, like Owen Wilson's Mobius character is someone that had a past life, was probably living in the 90s trying 100%. To buy himself a jet ski. You know what I mean? Awesome scene. So me as an avid jet skier, if anyone's seen my Instagram, I love jet skis and the way he describes them is like the greatest thing in the world, because they are. And so I think, yeah, he lived in the 90s, was like a wanted a jet ski, all this stuff. And I think what's going to happen is Loki's going to somehow, you know, make them aware of their own past as human beings. And all of a sudden, oh my God, we've got ourselves a multiverse. I do think somehow Owen Wilson ends up helping Loki, or Loki helping him, and kind of taking down the TVA and creating the chaos and amongst the timeline. But I do think somehow the time stone is involved, because at this point there's no way out. The planet's about to be destroyed. The Ark has been destroyed. There's no way out other than.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. And the show's already flipped itself upside down, because in the first episode, everyone's kind of shocked because you're to believe everything the TVA is telling you when you saw those Infinity Stones, and like they mean nothing. But at the end of the day, the TVA is the thing that means nothing. They're being manipulated and controlled by who I think is Kang the Conqueror. He's going to be the new big Thanos type of villain in the MCU. I think he's being teased and will show up maybe in the finale or as an end credit scene. I also think that the woman who seems to be in charge of the TVA, that Owen Wilson kind of, I thought in the second episode, I believe it was, gave off the vibe that they maybe have had a past relationship or something's going on. I think she's working for Kang the Conqueror. She knows what's actually going on and is just playing everyone else. Because I know the one prediction I made in our first episode, that Owen Wilson's character was definitely and ultimately going to be bad and be working with the variant Loki. I totally think I'm wrong with that and take that back, because Owen Wilson's character is a pawn now, or someone who is being deceived.
Yeah.
And I think he's starting. I think the whole thing about his character now and why he was so interested in Loki is he's realizing something is wrong and he's starting to remember, or something is going on.
The other thing that they've been making a lot of reference to, that I'm wondering if they're going to try to keep Tom Hiddleston in the next phase of MCU, is they keep kind of calling him the devil, and there's all sorts of devil mirror, yep, or like symbolism. Like, do you think they're going to try to make him into like Mephisto?
I feel like Mephisto has to be a villain sooner rather than later. Everyone thought it was coming in WandaVision. I mean, maybe. Like, I don't think Tom Hiddleston's going anywhere. And I've even heard Loki may be the one show that's happened so far that is going to get another season, which is interesting to me. It would be a totally different portrayal of that villain, but I'm not sure if they're teasing Loki or that villain is coming.
Yeah. I just feel like they keep doing, it's like very closely, like the references are all involving Loki in some way, shape, or form. So I'm just like, are they trying to say that somehow they're connected in some way? It just seems like it's coming. But speaking of WandaVision, did you hear what happened?
About that, I wanted to bring that up, about the end credit scene being changed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild. And that supposedly it's like a shadow of Doctor Strange coming to visit her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I need to watch that. I legitimately read about it a few hours ago. I find it so strange that they would have changed that. No pun intended.
But they're wondering, there's two things. Either they did it deliberately and we're hoping people would notice, and then it's going to like,
which is brilliant.
Yeah. Or they just, you know, during a random refresh, uploaded an alternate cut that they just weren't planning to release.
Yeah, I don't think that. If I'm going to now just talk out loud about this, and I don't want to get so into it, but there's been rumors that Doctor Strange was supposed to be in that show. And, you know, whether it was Kevin Feige, and I know every time on this podcast I say he's a god, but supposedly, you know, they didn't want to take the story away from Wanda, and it was her show, and, you know, wanted her to be the star of it, and bringing in, you know, some powerful white dude was going to overshadow her. I wonder now, they're like, we made a mistake not having any hints to him, and they threw that in there because it's very clear, you know. I actually think they're setting Wanda up to be a villain. And I don't know if she is going to be one of the villains in Doctor Strange 2, how that's going to happen. I mean, she'll go back and forth, I think, between being good and evil because she's learning all of her new powers and how powerful she is. I just think, not to go back to WandaVision, it was just a huge missed opportunity not having Doctor Strange in it. And that's what all the fans thought was going to happen.
Do you think that Wanda will ultimately interact with Magneto?
I want to say yes. I think they're going to find some way to retcon that. I think the multiverse is a perfect way of doing it. I'm really curious how they're going to introduce mutants fully and how they're going to honor the original comic book, you know, because obviously that's his daughter. I don't see how they don't do that, in my opinion.
If I have one wish, maybe it's two wishes, but when they bring the X-Men in, I know they got to basically recast everybody at this point, but I mean, I love Michael Fassbender as an actor, and I think he was handed dog crap material. With the exception of his first iteration, but everything else was pretty much dog crap. I would love to have him be a version of Magneto that somehow interacts with Wanda. Their ages are a little bit too close together, but I love Michael Fassbender. I think the dude is just can out-act anybody, and I would love to see him do something within the actual MCU.
Me too. Honestly, I would prefer him to come into the MCU as just someone new.
Do that too.
Because I in a weird way, now that we're talking about the whole Wanda thing, now I may go back when I'm saying they may not connect her to Magneto, because I do think they're going to want to go a completely new direction with the X-Men characters, a fresh take. I know I talked about this before. Like, I've heard some rumors that they may change Magneto's background to be where he is an African-American character, and it's more dealing with slavery aspects rather than the Holocaust, which I think would be a really good, you know, new, more modern take on the character. And Denzel Washington has been brought up. I mean, if you could get Denzel Washington to be in the MCU and to be take Magneto, yeah, take exactly. I think that'd be amazing. And then, like, I mean, not that Wanda couldn't be his daughter, but that just totally would make no sense based off of the background that we've learned about her.
Oh my God, though. Take my money. Me too. And if, like, Denzel Washington in any way, shape, or form comes into the MCU, like, I would pay $100 a ticket to see.
And I feel like it's believable because, quite frankly, as much as he's one of the greatest actors of all time, he's definitely takes some movies just for a paycheck. Why not join the MCU where he'll have fun? He'll make a lot of money. And it's like, will be a steady gig. And it's not like, I don't think Magneto will be the presence in the MCU that it would have been in just the standalone X-Men universe, just because there's just so many characters. But I think he'd be an amazing Magneto.
Honestly, though, if Denzel Washington plays Magneto, it doesn't matter how big or small they decide to make it, it's going to be massive. That is one scary Magneto, if he plays it the way I know he can.
Yes.
Like, that is, dare I say that? So we're talking comic characters here, and this is like unprecedented territory when we talk about, like, the only, like, comic book character to be nominated for anything was both iterations or two iterations of the Joker. I think Denzel could do an Oscar-winning performance as Magneto. That could be scary.
I agree.
Scary. That kind of power of both the character and then acting. I'm almost getting chills just thinking about that's dream casting. That'd be amazing.
And I think they're the only studio that could pull it off right now.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm gonna write fan fiction of just the way he can do this. Like, oh my God, that's, and there's
No, go.
There's no better casting for that character.
No, there isn't. Magneto's supposed amazing. To be
freaking intense, scary, you know, massive supervillain, or however you want to look at it. Yep. But
he doesn't think he's a villain. But.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe
who would you want to play Charles Xavier?
Ooh, dream casting for Charles Xavier. Well, I will say Patrick Stewart was
perfect. Yeah.
I don't want to come up with anyone else because he is Charles Xavier as far as I'm concerned.
It's funny. I still would love to see them bring him, like Ian McKellen and like Hugh Jackman, just even if it's just like one frame in Doctor Strange 2. Like I feel like that still could happen, which would be pretty awesome.
The only way I will allow this to happen is if somehow Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool can interact with Hugh Jackman's Wolverine.
I think that'll happen. In one
way, shape, or form.
I do. They, as much as Marvel at times wants to not have the fans guess everything, they are here for the fans. They have heard that the fans want that. I think it's going to happen, even if it's just for like I said, a scene
cameo. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the cameos are going to be out of the, I know we talk about this all the time, but they're going to be out of the wazoo for Doctor Strange too.
It's just one thing. If they bring X-Men in any way, shape or form, we need to hear this. We got to hear. Hold on.
Dude, that's rumored to be coming. The animated show is rumored to be coming back to Disney Plus.
That'd be cool.
Like a new version of it.
But everybody and their mother asked for two things. For Wolverine in his costume, which is a sin that never happened. And that theme song at some point.
Yeah, and Kevin Feige will give that to the people. There's no way.
The better theme song.
We talked about this before, not the theme song, but I agree with the theme song. But the suit, that's the suit the new Wolverine will wear. Yeah. There's no way around it.
Dream casting if Hugh Jackman can't play Wolverine.
If Hugh Jackman can't play Wolverine, I would love to. Carl Urban is a rumored person, which I actually think would be great. I love him, and he, to me, like, feels like a Wolverine. But I also would really like, I'm drawing a blank on his name. You may know it. He is the star of Kingsman. He played Elton John.
Oh, God. Taron Egerton?
Yeah, I think he'd be a pretty good Wolverine. I know that may sound weird, but I think he would be.
I think
he'd bring a different take. I want him in the MCU. He's a great actor.
Here's the biggest mistake I think they made on casting in all of the MCU. They should have put John Bernthal as Wolverine, because I feel like John Bernthal is a perfect Wolverine, and then they should have made Frank Castle as the Punisher, and everything would be right in the world. Because to me, John Bernthal, the way he played the Punisher is really the way Wolverine can be. It was just this really, you know, a short, stocky,
yep,
manly, grizzly, just anger-filled, you know, like that. That's Wolverine. I feel like John Bernthal would have been a perfect role for it, but now he's the Punisher, which there's rumors that are suggesting he is going to be in the MCU in a kind of watered down version of Frank Castle, which I'm cool with too, because you know, he did a decent job in the role. So
agree. Well, it's interesting because I know we've talked about that before, and I've read all about that. It's like, I wonder, Kevin Feige looks at those shows where he wasn't involved, because at that point it was Marvel Television was separate from the studios. And I have heard there was the Punisher, there was Daredevil, there was Iron Fist, there was Luke Cage, and there was Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
I've heard that, we've said this before, so Charlie Cox will be back as Daredevil, John Bernthal will be back as the Punisher, and Jessica Jones, I can't think of her name off the top of my head. She will be back. But Luke Cage and Iron Fist will be recasted, which makes me believe that he must think they were bad portrayals of the characters in his mind, where the other three were perfect. Because he doesn't care what other people think in terms of, oh, well, he's already played Daredevil. If he wanted a new Daredevil, he'd make a new Daredevil, in my opinion. Same with the Punisher. I find it interesting. The rumors could not be true at all, but I have found that. I think he wants to create a show where Iron Fist and Luke Cage interact with each other, and he just wants to start that from scratch.
Yeah. Well, if he retains you don't replace Charlie Cox.
No, he's amazing.
He's awesome. I liked John Bernthal. I just thought the second season was crap, and I thought the first half of the first season was crap. I just think the Punisher is much more than how they've conveyed it so far. I like John Bernthal. I think his performance was perfect in season two of Daredevil, which showed me everything I needed to see. I was very disappointed with the series. To this day, I'm still, this is blasphemy to some people, but I still think 2004's The Punisher with Thomas Jane is underrated. I think that he was a really good portrayal of Frank Castle, a slightly different portrayal of him, but one that in this watered down Disney world could actually work. And so, you know, if I had my dream, bring Thomas Jane back, but you know, I think John Bernthal is wonderful and respects the character. And if you put Kevin Feige in charge, even though he's not a big fan of the character, maybe they can make it work. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Okay.
Another thing that we didn't talk about, which I know you did not like and I did, so I would like to hear your opinion, the new Suicide Squad trailer.
Just light the whole DCEU on fire. Start over.
It's just so funny. I'm still like intrigued because they're not like saying, they're like, it's not a sequel, it's not a reboot. Like, what is it? Like, I think it looks good and I like James Gunn, so that's why I'm excited about it. But I don't understand why they automatically let. I think they wanted to just steal James Gunn, quite frankly, because I heard they let him pick whatever he wanted to make when Disney fired him. I just don't get why they're making another Suicide Squad, if I'm being honest. They kept some of the actors and some aren't there. They brought in new people. It's just weird. But I think the movie looks good. I don't get why they decided to do that. That just shows where they have no idea what they are doing when it comes to making their movies work as like a universe. That Idris Elba, I didn't realize it, that like he's being portrayed as like the main character. At least that's what the trailer showed. Yep. Which I liked that a lot.
That took down Superman with a kryptonite bullet.
That's from the comic books.
Yeah. So
James Gunn is being pretty comic accurate, which I like, which.
Yeah, it's just another it's just another goofy
CGI fest.
And
I don't know. Did you know John Cena's character already? He has a spinoff that's being filmed right now for a TV series on HBO Max. Supposedly he's like the standout of that movie.
I'm not surprised. He's the only part of the trailers that's pretty good, in my opinion. I don't know. It's Sylvester Stallone's character is just, come on. And, you know, there's just certain things that should just belong on the pages of the comic, and like a giant starfish.
That's fair. Yeah, like, not to cut you off, but like you bring that up. Like, I know when we were talking, the giant starfish, like that is actually the first villain I was telling you, like the Justice League faces in the comics. But maybe you're right. Like, maybe that just doesn't belong. It's also from like, you know, a very different time. Yeah. Should that be brought on screen in today's day of age? You saying it to me right now maybe makes me rethink, like, man, maybe you're right. Like, that was not the right choice.
Not the right choice, in my opinion. I don't know. Here's the thing. I've got a lot of reasons to not want to see this Suicide Squad. The first one was extremely disappointing. I don't like James Gunn. I love Guardians of the Galaxy 1. Hate Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I think James Gunn, why he's getting preferential treatment when he's treated people the way he has, I don't understand. The fact that he's able to come back to Disney, I'm not a fan. I don't really want to give him my support. So that's a big one for me. I don't like,
it's funny you bring that up, and not to get into this, but I'm shocked that Disney did bring him back. Who knows what goes on behind closed doors, but I get the vibe they brought him back because they didn't want to mess up one of their biggest franchises. He's making this movie and he will never touch a Disney movie again. In my opinion, that's what is what's happening. They made the fans happy. They may have made other people upset, which I get, because at the time I was very like, I mean, some of the stuff, like, I don't want to bring it up on a podcast, but that he did tweet is gross. And I think it happened in the very beginning when a lot of people were being canceled. Not that that makes any excuses. And I also think it helped that every person rallied for him.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I know you're a big loyalty dude. It's interesting how everyone did, even like Chris Pratt, who I know there's no way Chris Pratt that you read about is actually would be friends with a guy like James Gunn, but he respects him and obviously enjoyed working with him because he made him a household name.
Well, that's why. So Chris Pratt, good human being. Hey, I wouldn't be an action star today if it wasn't for James Gunn. Loyalty. Plus, Dave Bautista basically threatened to kill everyone if they didn't freaking sign that piece of paper.
Which
Dave Bautista is a scumbag.
I agree. I'm not a fan of him at all. He's insane. I don't know why he thinks he's God's gift to the earth. I personally love Drax, but even he's been doing press and he's like ripping that movie. He's basically, I think he's going to die. James Gunn is probably going to kill him off to appease him because Drax is such a popular character. I just don't know why he the guy goes off like he's this great actor. I mean, he's just not. He's a wannabe Dwayne. Like, I used to say this about John Cena, and I've changed my opinion. Like, he was the wannabe Dwayne. Like, Dwayne Johnson gave all the people in the WWE this, like, hope that they could become the biggest star in the world. No one will ever be like Dwayne Johnson, in my opinion, from the WWE. Dave Bautista definitely is not in that league. That guy cannot act. It works because he is the butt of the jokes, and he's so upset about that. He's been coming out that Drax should be this badass character. James Gunn actually saw that it wouldn't work. Because he's not a good actor. He found a way to get him to have good comedic timing. I mean, I can go all day about, you know, Dave Bautista. He's this fake loyalty dude. He acts like he's this loyal dude, but he'd be nowhere without Disney.
Yeah.
Like, without Guardians of the Galaxy. Like,
he doesn't understand the silver platter that he's been handed and how privileged he is. And he sits there and he complains about working on a Bond movie. Who in the history of the world complains about working on a Bond movie?
The only
person that has a right to complain about working on a Bond movie is Gemma Edgerton, who came out and said, hey, my character was weak and just a pawn. And it was. And it was like, but you still signed up to do it, so you really shouldn't freaking. But I get it. Hers, I was like, okay, that's a fair. That was a really freaking shallow character. And most Bond women have been very, you know, strong, powerful women. And that one was just a complete floozy. So understood. But Dave Bautista is like, oh, it was this long, drawn out process and it was so difficult. We had to work hard. It's like, You had to work hard to be on a Bond movie and get paid millions of dollars and look like a badass. Like, get over it. I hate that guy.
Yeah, and he probably doesn't even talk in that movie. I mean, the guy had one leading role that was some dumb buddy cop movie, and it was garbage. Like, I'm happy we both agree about the Dave Bautista scenario. He's just
in an age of YouTube boxing matches. I want to challenge Dave Bautista to a boxing match.
I would love that. I'm putting that in the interwebs.
Yeah, I would totally pay to see that. That would be amazing.
That's a fighter too. So I will Jake Paul that guy right to the canvas, bro.
Yeah, spoiled brat, and he acts like he's humble. He's just not. He's a very strange dude.
Yeah,
like
he's just an elitist. He doesn't know what it's like to be in the real world, and he pretends like he does, and it just bothers me. So, but you know, to each their own. But yeah, I wasn't a fan of that trailer at all. I did rewatch the Eternals trailer on a big screen in the beginning of F9 and thought, okay, this is going to be epic. So I have a newfound kind of appreciation for that movie. I got really excited about it. It's basically the same trailer that we all got to see, but it was just on a bigger screen. I forgot how epic going to the movies really is. And seeing it on the big screen was just like, okay, this movie's going to be epic in every way, shape, and form. And I was really excited about it. So that's one big one that I can't wait for. And so we've got quite a summer.
Did you see anything for Jurassic World Dominion in front of your? Okay.
Nope, but I didn't get to go to IMAX, unfortunately. So I didn't get the extended cut. But I've been Googling it. It's like nothing's hit the web yet.
Yeah, nothing's been official. I've seen some people who clearly recorded it on YouTube. And I mean, I don't want to waste my time watching that because it's clearly not good quality. But I was just curious because I'm very excited for that movie, actually. And I didn't like the last one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the jury's out, but they brought everyone back. So I'm pretty excited about that. But the one thing that did happen in F9 is there is an after the credits scene.
Is it good or bad?
Best part of the movie.
Okay.
Also, the last 10 seconds of the movie, right before the credits roll, they do something to really get people's hopes up. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
And you kind of get, you know, it's almost like, do you remember in Fast Five after the credits and then they throw the thing down and it's like Letty?
Yeah.
And you're like chills. Very similar moment at the end of F9. Very similar.
Interesting.
Do
you think they're setting, maybe this happens in the movie and it's a spoiler, but do you think Dwayne Johnson will be back in these movies?
That is hard to say. I do think they will.
What did you think? Did you hear Vin Diesel doing press about his whole feud that happened like a few years ago with Dwayne Johnson, like that he was doing that to like get a better, you know, performance out of him?
Yeah. Vin Diesel's just full of it, man. He's still riding. I don't want to bring it. It really hurts me to talk about my childhood hero and other people using his death for capitalism. But I feel like that's happening. I won't really say much more than that, but it just really frustrates me how Vin Diesel tries to promote movies, regardless of whether it's that or if it's, you know, his feud with The Rock. I mean, at the end of the day, the feud with The Rock was The Rock wanted to work, Vin Diesel didn't. And The Rock is got a very strict schedule. He runs multiple businesses and he films movies and TV shows at the same time. So he shows up on time, he gets his stuff done, he's got a stringent workout plan, and then he leaves. Yeah,
he's jealous of him. He's just jealous of him.
Well, what really happened though is Vin Diesel would show up 2 hours late because he's like, I'm in my trailer and I'm not ready. And I'm a diva and I'm the producer. This movie's my movie. And it would disrupt their rock schedule and hundreds of people that work to support his other projects, where he'd have to then delay every single day his schedule because Vin Diesel didn't show up for their scenes together. So then and finally he writes an Instagram post like, these guys are pansy ass. And it was like, cause they are. Cause the one thing I like about The Rock, I actually hate most of his movies, but the dude works hard for what he has, appreciates what he has, and is never going to let anyone outwork him. Right. And that's not a facade. That's just real. When you read behind the scenes, what really this guy does on a daily basis, he's a machine. Him and Mark Wahlberg are probably the two biggest like business and acting combined, where they work like 80 hours a week and they just work for it. And I respect those two actors like beyond anybody else. And so it's like, but then you got a diva in Vin Diesel that, yeah, that and that whole thing. No, BS. You weren't doing that on purpose. You were being a diva and The Rock called you out on it, and your rock hard image was getting, diminished, and you freaked out about it.
I mean, have you seen, I mean, he's already a beast, but his workout regimen for Black Adam, I mean, he looks like a god. I'm pretty excited for that movie, actually.
Yeah, I think it could be really good.
I'm a little upset. Like I'm surprised he's not in the MCU, Dwayne Johnson, and he clearly has a relationship with Disney. But now I feel like that just can't really happen.
Yeah, I don't think it will. But, you know, I think that whole Black Adam universe will be its own thing. Maybe they'll bring Henry Cavill in for the Man of Steel type, you know. He keeps saying the new strongest man in the universe for the DCEU. It would be cool to see those two interact. I'm excited for that movie, but like also in the DC kind of realm, all this stuff coming out with The Flash. We've seen set photos with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, pumped for that movie.
Oh my God. Everything that comes out with that movie just is like, did they finally get it right? Like,
I will say though, finally, think the Supergirl costume's atrocious.
Yeah, but I think part of it is, so she has this harness on underneath, and so it's really making it look awkward and awkwardly shaped and just doesn't fit really well. But I think it's just because all the pictures that were released, she's in this harness that's underneath it. And it just,
that's fair.
It's just awkward. I think they'll add a cape. Maybe it'll be digital.
I think it is always digital now.
Yeah. So we'll see, you know.
They're definitely setting her up though to be like, I mean, anyone who thinks Henry Cavill's coming back with Superman is gonna be upset. I mean, he's done. He's coming to Marvel, in my opinion.
Yeah. He should play Adam Warlock.
He would be good. He would be a good Adam Warlock. I never even really thought of him as that character.
I mean, he's already playing a blonde for Netflix.
He definitely can pull it off. I mean, I love him. I mean, we've talked about him many times. So.
I thought he was great in Fallout, Mission Impossible.
Yeah, he's a guy who could, I feel like, take over that franchise. I mean, he'll never do the type of work. I mean, he can't, but I meant he could have, but he can never do what Tom Cruise does. No actors will.
Yeah.
That franchise will die with Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah. That's one thing. So there's like Bond will live on forever, right? We talk about Indiana Jones and how like, yeah, you know, someone could probably take on that role. You're never going to remake Mission Impossible and Ethan Hunt. Like,
no, they tried to with Jeremy Renner's character and it didn't work.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. And honestly, Mission Impossible as a movie was an experiment to remake the show, right? The TV show. did a better job than the TV show did. Yeah. And then now it's just not even Mission Impossible anymore. It's Tom Cruise does crazy shit and makes a really good movie while doing it. And they literally make movies around the stunt work, but the stories are so well written that it's like, how did you just pull that off? But they literally, they probably sit in a room and say, we want to do these stunts. Now write a story to make it work. But unlike the freaking adolescents over in the Fast and Furious world, they actually write some believable story arcs that are like interesting and fun and connect. But you can't do it without Tom Cruise. You just can't. So, and I just rewatched the Maverick trailer because it. So I, after seeing F9, I thought about, all right, what are all those movies that were coming out in 2020 that still have not come out yet? That was like, there was just an epic list of movies that I was so excited for. Yeah. So I went back and I like watched all the trailers because I was like, let's get hyped up again. Because they haven't released new trailers. Like nothing's coming out. It's like crazy. They're all, and what's happening now, and I think maybe they figured out this formula, but like these movies are coming out and they like, they'll just like, release a trailer like a month before, and then they have like every week like these strong blasts, but they don't do this like there's been no other No Time to Die trailer. It's coming out in October. That's right around the corner, right? There's not another. When is the next trailer?
Yeah, I personally, that's weird. I think because they don't know what to do with it, but I also think it's because of the sale of MGM, and they were like, this isn't going to be we're not marketing this movie anymore.
Yeah, but what about Top Gun Maverick? I mean, that's coming out in December. They only had that one trailer, which was epic, because I just watched it again. And I'm like, holy crap, that looks good.
Yeah, I'm pumped for that movie. I feel like that's, they're going to make a push for that too, because that's going to release on Paramount Plus like 45 days, I think, after, or 30 days it's in theaters. So they're going to hold that probably back a little bit promotion. I mean, they're going to want people to go see it in the theater. Exactly. Yeah. But I'm just trying to think if Paramount has anything big that they're promoting before that.
Yeah. And then, but then there's other things like Morbius. Morbius is coming out.
Yeah. Which we never talked about that on the podcast, but how they said that was being delayed, but he was totally full of it. Yep. And as part of the MCU, I know we talked about that, and like I believed it for a second, but then when you know were kind of giving me a little bit more of a rundown on Tyrese. Tyrese in general, like he clearly just didn't know what he was talking about. And Sony quickly, I just think it's weird he talked about the movie being delayed. Why would you make that up? Someone had to have told him that.
I don't know. If you follow him for as long as I have, because I was a big fan of Fast and Furious, he's not all there.
I think that's being delayed though because of Spider-Man, No Way Home. Hmm. And supposedly, I had another rumors I had been reading recently was, so for everyone who doesn't know, this is, you know, Spider-Man, even though it's part of the MCU now, it's Disney has a deal with Sony. Because they actually, that's one character that they've never regained their rights back. And Marvel Studios is in charge of actually the creator for the movie, but Sony's in charge of marketing it. Supposedly Kevin Feige's like, hey, I've gotten you this far. Just listen to me. Do not promote this movie. Your last trailer for Spider-Man 2, you spoiled, you know, some things. I never would have made a trailer that way. He doesn't want that trailer to come out till Loki's done, is what I've heard. If Sony had it their way, there'd already be a trailer for it. And he was like, no, because you're going to spoil then all my other stuff that comes out before.
Yeah. Fair.
So I think that Spider-Man trailer is within a month. It's a month away. And I believe you're going to see everything you want to see in that trailer.
I don't think so.
I do at this point. It's just, why not?
You think they're going to reveal multiple Spider-Man?
Yes.
No way.
Yeah, I do. That's the whole, let me tell you, there's no way Sony doesn't want that. And I think there is going to be a compromise between Marvel and Sony about showing that in the movie. That is going to get people pumped. And it's just, it's like the worst kept secret of Hollywood right now. So why insult, you know, the fans of the internet age of like pretending that's not happening? It does the marketing for itself then. If you're a Spider-Man, I'll use you as an example. I know you'd see the movie anyway, but I know you think Tobey Maguire is the best Spider-Man. You're not too keen on Tom Holland. You're going to see this movie. Well, I'm just okay, fine. I know you don't not like him, but he's by no means your favorite.
It's not him. It's just how they brought the way the character is
kind okay. of but what I'm getting at here is the moment you drop, just the trailer can end with you just seeing Tobey Maguire come in shot. It's done. Like, everyone's going to want to see that movie. I don't think there's any point of keeping that a secret anymore. I think what they're going to keep secrets are that, like, William Dafoe is in the movie as Norman Osborn, for example. But the Spider-Man, there's just no point in keeping that a secret, in my opinion.
Agreed. Sorry, someone's knocking on my door.
No, it's okay.
Agreed. That would be awesome. If that happens, I'd be surprised, but also extremely excited.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think that about covers it. And let's just pray that Loki somehow turns around in this next episode.
I do think it will. I've been disappointed that I thought it was going to be the best show. I don't think it can redeem itself to be. I think Falcon and the Winter Soldier is going to be my favorite, and Loki can't surpass that, in my opinion.
Agreed. Agreed. So let's leave it at that for this week of the Nerds Be Heard podcast. Signing off, I am Matt, the Master. The Jedi Master, Les Meister, joined as always by
Darth Charlie the Wise. And make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube channel. You follow Nerds Be Heard podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere where, you know, podcasts can be found. And also make sure you check out our Instagram page, Nerds Be Heard podcast.
Until, like us on Instagram.
Yeah. And until next week, everyone.
Until next week.
May the force be with you.
May the force be with you.